Well, now that we've seen some improvement from the flooding that occurred earlier this spring, it's time to kind of step back and assess some of what happened and how we bounce back in some respects. Folks are doing that in some of those communities in the Missouri River Valley, but what about some of the farm grounds that had standing water, whether it was a short period of time or a longer period of time from those floods earlier this spring? Well, the folks at Iowa State University Extension and Outreach provided some information on some things to look for as you're trying to get things going here this spring out in the field. First of all, as the floodwaters recede, the challenges are just kind of starting in some instances for farmers and livestock producers. Beth Doran is a beef specialist with ISU Extension and Outreach, and she recommends that producers get out into the fields as soon as they can, that assess some of the damage to the pastures and the hay ground, and check out some possible disaster assistance, too, if that's needed. She advised cattlemen to look for three things in their assessments, things like debris, silt on the forage, and thinned or dead forage plants. She mentioned that debris can include things like wire, metal, and trash, anything that could injure animal health, and is usually found along the fence lines and in the corners of the fields where those things get caught up after the floods. Brian Lang is an extension field agronomist, and he said silt on forage is a big issue because it's unpalatable and could carry microbes affecting animal health. He mentioned that, ironically, we need the rain to wash off the silt. This early in the season, it's likely more rain will come, but otherwise, if the forage was tall enough, you could chop the silted forage back onto the field to encourage clean regrowth. And by the time farmers are able to run equipment on a pasture or a hay field, visual assessments of forage species survival can be conducted and should be pretty obvious. He mentioned whether the forage plant survived depends on three factors: the plant species, the time it was underwater, and how much of the plant was submerged. He says that some species such as smooth brome grass, orchard grass, fescue, and rye grass should grow through a moderate silt deposit of less than 2 inches and can withstand several days of flooding without injury. Reed canary grass can stand longer submersion than other perennial grasses, but meadow brome grass cannot tolerate any flooding at all. The time under the water affects the amount of oxygen that's available to the plants, and it's related to temperature. So Lang says, fortunately, during spring flooding, cooler temperatures allow plants to survive longer underwater. Flash flooding, as opposed to standing water, increases survivability because the plants experience less oxygen depletion in moving water than still water conditions. And also, plants with more leaves above the water are more likely to survive as well. There's plenty of assistance with regard to these types of things through different publications and different types of help through Iowa State University Extension and Outreach. But producers that do have pasture damage or hayfield damage are encouraged to contact their local Farm Service Agency offices to report that damage and to determine if they might be eligible for any kind of assistance as well. That was step one in kind of recovering. They listed a kind of a step two process as well. As I said, as floodwaters recede, renovation of the flooded pastures gets underway at that point. And Beth Doran, the beef specialist, and Joel DeYoung, a field agronomist with ISU Extension and Outreach, recommended that producers check the pasture plants for survival, and they remind producers that forage production is a function of the plant species and their destiny and density and growth. DeYoung suggests evaluating the live plants for plant vigor, plant density, and desirable species versus weeds. Now, there are some other things that you should look for as well, because flooding can flush nutrients out of a field that are necessary for plant growth. Some of that washes away with soil. So they also talk about if there's an adequate percent of ground cover of desirable species, they recommend boosting production with an application of 50 to 80 pounds of nitrogen per acre. The grasses usually respond the most to nitrogen fertilization, but soil sampling will reveal if other nutrients were flushed from the soil and need to be replaced. Now, also, a major flooding impact on grass pastures may be due to excessive sediment deposits. They mentioned most perennial forages can produce new shoots and tillers if sediment deposits are less than 2 inches. In this case, crusting may occur, and light tillage will level the sediment and enhance recovery. With deeper sediment, plants can suffocate and result in substantial stand loss. So in those areas, mechanical removal is preferred to reduce the plant loss and reduce the need for any reseeding. DeYoung mentioned with thinner stands, interseeding with a no-till drill may be the best approach. If the stand is too thin, then you can complete the renovation or reseeding, and you may need to do that completely. If you do have to take on that route, consider what kinds of improved species to include in the seed mixture, too. Some might be more tolerant of wetter or drier conditions, and different types of situations where you need it there. Brian Lang, an ISU Extension and Outreach field agronomist, recommends, too, that producers treat new pasture like newly established hayfield. He said that the best way to start a new pasture, in his opinion, is to treat it like a hay stand in the establishment year if the terrain allows for a hay harvest. Two hay cuttings provide time to establish strong root systems and then include the area into your normal grazing system. Now, they do mention, too, that weeds can be a problem in flooded pastures. So broadleaf herbicides can be applied to grass pastures. However, some of those herbicides have restrictions regarding new seedlings. So in those cases, periodic mowing might be the best weed control option. Doran also reminds producers that evidence suggests these considerations. Use of a sacrifice pasture while new stands are being established, the use of summer annuals or fall grazing of cover crops, and again, ISU Extension and Outreach has plenty of specialists to help with that, plenty of information that folks can access as well to find out more details about how to deal with some of those specific issues regarding some of this year's unusual spring weather. Also, a lot of folks like to hunt morel mushrooms, too, in this part of the state. And flooding throughout Iowa this spring has done some damage, as you know, to farmland, public parks, recreational spots. It's caused some pressures on drainage systems. And all of those things can impact this season's morel mushroom hunting as well. The folks with the Extension Service say that regardless of the flood conditions, you should always proceed scouting and hunting morel mushrooms with caution. And they mentioned some best practices to follow, too. If you enjoy hunting morels, they say that you should avoid hunting in areas where animals have perished. For example, where fish have died as a result of flooding, or where other animals may have died. Avoid harvesting specimens near places where fecal droppings are present. And also avoid sites where potential chemical contaminants, pesticides and heavy metals, things like that, could be present or were washed off, particularly this year due to some of those flooded areas. When you're hunting morel mushrooms, pick only intact, true morel specimens. You want to make sure they're free from worms, slime, or rotten areas, discoloration, or any evidence of decay. Harvest above the soil level to avoid soil or debris, and pack the specimens individually in wax or paper bags. Avoid plastic bags and any other packing materials and storage practices that are conducive to humidity and rots caused by bacteria and fungi, and refrigerate them as soon as possible. Those morel mushrooms should be thoroughly cooked and not mixed with alcohol. Even though morels are considered safe to eat, they can on occasion result in allergic reactions or other side effects that vary from person to person. For example, people with suppressed or compromised immune systems taking certain medications or suffering from medical conditions that may cause the human immune system to be weak or have other digestive system conditions that may be a risk of adverse effects. They do provide plenty of more information through the Extension Service, too, if you want to learn more about morel mushrooms and hunting. They do say that hunter and consumer awareness is important, and there are always risks associated with consuming wild morel mushrooms. So you can find out more details, and ISU Extension also offers a morel certification class every year where folks can discuss things like proper identification traits, distinguishing true morels from false ones, and best harvesting practices as well, including how to avoid any potential post-harvest contamination. They, of course, also encourages food safety to minimize the risk of any foodborne illnesses. So those who are interested and do enjoy morel mushroom hunting, consider those details as well before you head out to have some of that fun.